Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah, we started to burn so many things we found. That's the glorious Star Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song, back for another show here, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thanks for joining us. I got three great guests that are going to come in sequence. We're going to start with Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear. Talk about some great and some and disturbing developments with nuclear, and also focus on the Davis-Besse nuke in Ohio, because we're expecting a decision fairly soon that's going to have a huge impact on the future of Ohio and the whole Northeast, and certainly on the Davis-Besse nuke. We'll be joined by Bob Fetrakis, going to talk to us about the primary that just happened in Ohio and the outcome, and also Bob and I both went to see Bernie Sanders, and I have a piece up at Reader's Report News today about the Bernie Sanders campaign. We want to talk about that. And then Richard Charnin, our resident statistical expert on electronic election theft, will join us to talk about all the Massachusetts primary and other possible shenanigans that have gone on with the electronic vote count in this primary season, and most importantly, what we can expect, what we want to do about all this in the coming election. So, first of all, let's start with nuclear power, and especially the Davis-Besse plant and what's happening in Ohio. Kevin Camps, are you with us?
Yes, Harvey. Hello.
Great. You are Mr. Reliable. It's a great thing to have you on the show. So, the governor of Ohio, John Kasich, is the only person other than Hillary or Trump. Although I guess we're waiting to see Missouri. It looks like Bernie could still win Missouri. But Trump took the Republican primaries except for Ohio and John Kasich. And we're looking at a major decision here in Ohio about the Davis-Besse nuclear plant. Can you tell us about it, Kevin? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, First Energy, which owned Davis-Besse and a string of coal plants, as well as other nukes like Perry and over in Pennsylvania, you got Beaver Valley. So First Energy has applied for a major bailout at ratepayer expense, and this would cover the Davis-Besse and the Sammis coal plant and a number of other coal plants. That's what's included in this proposal. And the figure that's often put out there is an analysis by the Ohio Consumers Council that this could cost Ohio ratepayers a surcharge of around $4 billion, although sometimes it could go up to $5 billion, depending on the assumptions. And this proceeding has been torturous. It's gone on for years now. A decision was expected last year, but the resistance has been so intense that the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio has not dared yet to do the wrong thing. Well, it's really coming down to a final decision now. It's been very interesting to watch. I call it the clash of the titans, because you've got companies like Exelon Nuclear, no friend of ours, but they've jumped into the fray. They're not even an official party to the proceeding, but they came in some months back, right before New Year's, and said, hey, look, PUCO, we could beat this deal by $2 billion. It's a bad deal that First Energy is proposing. And then another competitor, a fossil fuel burner called Dynegy, jumped into the fray and said, oh, we could beat that. We could beat First Energy's offer by $2.5 billion. So what those companies are trying to do is introduce what's supposed to be the rules of the game anyway, which is competition. And First Energy, which can't compete with these, geriatric, dinosaur, dirty, dangerous, and expensive power plants, are wanting a major bailout from their own ratepayers.
this is wild. So out of the blue, what's happened then is that 15 years ago, I was here. It was one of the most nauseating political experiences you could ever imagine. I basically have not been back to the Ohio legislature. Since this, the utility companies came in Ohio and said, well, we want to have competition. but in order to have competition, you have to give us all this money for our nuclear plants. I mean, how they did this with a straight face, only really Bush v. Gore can be put in the same league with the hypocrisy and stupidity involved with this rate case. But the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, handed Perry and Davis Bessie nuclear plants billions of dollars to get them ready to compete, and of course they still can't compete at all. And now First Energy is gaming the system with a very complicated, you know, subterranean maneuver here, and they want the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio to approve, as you say, Kevin, about $4 billion in handouts to keep some of these coal burners. One of them at least is 50 years old. Davis Bessie is 40 years old, and you know, if anybody had a check for $3 or $4 billion, the last thing you'd invest in is a 40-year-old nuclear plant and a 50-year-old coal plant.
Well, you know,
am I wrong? That's basically.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The age degradation is incredible. So another, you know, recent development at Davis Bessie Atomic Reactor is the list of license amendment requests that First Energy is proposing applying to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for approval of is growing. You know, we know all about the severe and ever-worsening cracking of the concrete containment shield building at Davis Bessie. But that's not the only issue of age-related degradation. Just last week, the NRC, which is complicit with and colluding with First Energy to keep it operating, the Davis Bessie, they organized a meeting between themselves on very short notice. They're supposed to give us 10 days notice of these supposedly public meetings. They gave us less than one day's notice, but we caught it anyway because we're, you know, vigilant. We're on the lookout. And so we said, hey, NRC, give us the phone number. We want to listen in. We want to take part. And wouldn't you know, they turned right around and they canceled the meeting indefinitely. So they're going to try to sneak it past us, you know, next Thursday or something. It's all about a license amendment request. I'll read the language. Pre-application discussion of a potential relief request to support repair of a hot leg water level nozzle during the spring 2016 refueling outage at Davis Bessie. That's one example. Just yesterday, another two examples of license amendment requests at Davis Bessie. One of them had to do with fire protections. Davis Bessie has been violating NRC fire protection regulations for years and decades. They want another exemption. And another of these license amendment requests had to do with, let's see what this was, allowing a tenfold increase in radioactive effluents by using different methodologies to assess environmental releases. So this place has fallen apart. And, you know, that figure of $4 billion to $5 billion, it would probably take most of that bailout to replace the shield building alone at Davis Bessie, this monumental structure. And they have no plans of spending one penny on repair or replacement of the shield building. That entire bailout would just go into their pocket.
Oh, God. Now, of course, now everybody's jumping up and down about our wonderful moderate governor, John Kasich, who appears to be an endangered species, which is a Republican who seems to be sane. We have our own opinions of John Kasich here in the state. But, Kevin, where has Kasich come down on the Davis Bessie bailout?
Well, I mean, he has had a huge hand in appointing the current PUCO commissioners. I mean, one crazy thing about the PUCO right now, and I'm no expert, but I'm trying to follow it, is there's not a single Democrat on the PUCO. I think it's five commissioners. I think three are Republicans and two are so-called independents. So it's crazy political. You know, another part of this story is the gutting of Ohio's efficiency and renewable standards. First Energy's lobbyists had a big hand in that. They can't stand the competition. They can't compete with efficiency and renewables, so they do what they do best. They go to the state house and the state legislature, and they lobby to get, you know, improvements in law reversed or at least suspended. And, you know, they're trying to kill the competition. They're trying to stave off the future, if we're going to have a future, which is renewables and efficiency. And, you know, you'd know more than me, Harvey, on Kasich's recent reversal of his previous position, but he's had a big hand in this anti-renewable, anti-efficiency lobbying of recent years.
It's astounding, truly astounding, $4 billion. And this is the governor that's, you know, talks about creating jobs. I mean, if they took this $4 billion and put it into renewables, you know, wind power, especially wind power is very good in the northern part of the state. It would be a tremendous boon. I mean, if they spend this $4 billion on Davis Bessie and those nuke and those coal burners, you know, Ohio really has no future, because the money has got to come out of somewhere. And if they are depress the rates artificially and to force this nuke and these coal burners to continue to operate, there'll be no market for renewable energy. And so Ohio is just going to be this tremendous rust bucket, radioactive rust bucket. It's really pathetic.
Bob, you know, one of the themes that's been running through my head is in Orwell's 1984, there was the memory hole, you know, where the truth and history was burned down the memory hole as it got rewritten and revised. And we're seeing that again and again. So, for example, when we intervened against the Davis-Bessie license extension, one of the things we brought up, like you just said, was that wind power alone, that solar photovoltaics alone, certainly the two in combination, and, you know, integrating into that energy storage, like compressed air energy storage, and First Energy owns a potentially very powerful compressed air energy storage facility in Norton, Ohio, not far from its Akron headquarters, that they bought years ago and made a big deal about in terms of its renewable energy potential. So we brought all that up at the proceeding before the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's licensing board. The licensing board was interested to hear more, and they granted us a hearing on these renewable energy alternatives. And we were fortunate enough to have Dr. Al Campan from the University of Toledo, an emeritus chairman of the physics department and a solar PV expert, as our expert witness. And his written testimony showed that easily Davis-Bessie's 908 megawatts electric could be replaced by these renewable energy sources. And what did First Energy do? They appealed to the nuclear regulatory commissioners themselves, the five directors of the agency. And wouldn't you know, they got that licensing board hearing reversed. We were not going to have a hearing now. So, you know, they violated the National Environmental Policy Act by doing so. You're supposed to require a hard look by federal decision makers before going forward. And an example of the Orwellian memory hole in the PUCO proceeding, the PUCO hasn't done the wrong thing yet. I sure hope they don't. But First Energy, in its audacity, has asked the PUCO to strike from the record all kinds of things that have come up in the proceeding thus far, just basic facts about the history of this proceeding. They're going to try to make it so that courts of law down the road won't even know about things that First Energy said in the past, like you brought up, their advocacy just 8 years ago for competition in Ohio in the retail electricity sector. They're trying to get that history erased.
Jeez, it's mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. Bob Fitricus, are you with us? Bob Fitricus hasn't joined us yet.
I'm here.
Oh, you are here.
Hello.
Okay, Bob. Hi, Bob. Listen, my co-conspirator here, Bob Fitricus, I did want to mention one thing before we jump off of nuclear and start talking about Ohio politics. Kevin, you and I have and all of us have a great thing to celebrate. The Japanese courts
have ruled that the safety preparations at two reactors at Takahama in Japan are insufficient. And I just got a YouTube, which I posted at nuke3.org, of a celebration in Japan that the two reactors at Takahama have shut. This is the first time a court in Japan has ordered operating reactors to be shut. And it's a fantastic breakthrough. It will be appealed, of course, but hopefully the courts will stay with it. And this, I believe there's only one or two reactors now operating in Japan. Do you know about that, Kevin? Or was it your site at Beyond Nuclear?
Yeah, the only two operating reactors now in all of Japan are at Sendai in the extreme southwest of Japan. And these two reactors that have been granted approval to restart and were operating, the court order has now ordered them shut down, and they are shut down under court order. It's a miracle. It's unprecedented. It's historic. I am floored by the Japanese anti-nuclear power movement, the things they're getting done. You know, there were 54 commercial operating reactors in Japan on 3/11/11 when the Fukushima nuclear catastrophe began. The pro-nuclear Abe administration, Prime Minister Abe and his liberal democratic party, one of their founding planks in the 1950s was pro-nuclear power under pressure by the U.S. CIA and Atomic Energy Commission, this Atoms for Peace push around the world. And they're still at it to this day, despite Fukushima. And, you know, the Japanese anti-nuclear movement, now joined by huge numbers of the Japanese population, are saying, no way, it ain't happening. And they just scored this tremendous victory. Takahama units 3 and 4 are very close to the ancient city of Kyoto, the city of 1,000 Buddhist temples and Shinto shrines. And a part of the the messaging, I guess you could say, by groups like Green Action Kyoto, Eileen Miyoko Smith, is this is a World Heritage Site, and it's being put at risk, not just the people of Kyoto region and Osaka, but the history and the culture. The largest lake in Japan, Lake Biwa, is being put at risk. 14 million people depend on that lake for drinking water. So just a tremendous victory, and like you said, the fight is still on. Another huge issue at this fifth anniversary of Fukushima is the Japanese government's attempt to pressure evacuees back into contaminated areas of Fukushima Prefecture under threat of removal of their compensation, which would render many of them homeless if they refused to go back to these contaminated homes that they were forced to flee. So the fight is still on 5 years after Fukushima began.
Yes, and now the government in Japan is talking about staging some Olympic events in Fukushima. I mean, these people are completely psychotic, and that'll give us a good segue to Bob Patrakis to talk to us about John Kasich and his victory here in the Ohio primary. And Kevin, you're welcome to stay on. We are assuming now, Bob, and maybe a comment on this, you know, Kevin has discussed this huge decision that's pending in the Ohio Public Utilities Commission about the whether or not they're going to give this bailout to the Davis Bessie plant. And now that the spotlight is on John Kasich, as, you know, shall we say, the only sane Republican, which keeps the bar pretty low here, how do you think this is all going to impact Kasich and his run for the presidency, how it plays out in Ohio on Davis Bessie?
Well, you know, Kasich is willing to do whatever he needs to do. I mean, you well know he's completely remade himself. He went from a guy who told labor and working people when he tried to buff the labor unions that either get on the bus or he'd run them over. And then, I mean, they stopped the bus and turned it over on him. And then he became touchy-feely. So,
he's our huggy candidate.
Yeah, which is odd to us in Ohio because he's completely remade his personality. I mean, to his credit, he's the only guy who's not post-policy, right, that he'll still actually, you know, debate numbers and policy even if you disagree with it. You know, he'll accept the money on affordable health care, or Obamacare, as his supporters would call it. You know, he did take the money, the hundreds of millions of dollars, to put 250,000 more Ohioans on health care. But he also, you know, just recently cut off all the money that goes to Planned Parenthood. So he's by no means a moderate guy. He's just, you know, a conservative that actually does traditional policy with numbers and doesn't do name-calling.
Yeah, I gotta say, you know, it's pretty psychedelic. It's the only word I can use to describe seeing John Kasich hugging people at these campaign events. I mean, you know, the next thing we're gonna turn in a campaign event where they're all gonna sit around smoking dope.
Well, according to Roger Stone, who worked, I think we talked about this before, who worked with Trump, is Kasich got fired from the 76 campaign for selling pot to field workers, which to me, that's the most positive thing I've heard about Kasich. That
he was
the man.
he was a popular one. One of the networks did run. You know, it's been a running joke in Central Ohio that he was a deadhead, and that he, when he was a congressman, he turned up at a dead concert in D.C. expecting to get on stage because he was a congressman, and they threw him out. And, you know, this has been one of our insider jokes here in Columbus, and I just saw it on CNN. I mean, they did the whole bit. It was spectacular. So the question we're asking now, you know, is, Bob, as an expert on Ohio politics and someone who, like me, has followed John Kasich way too long, what do you think, how do you think it could play out with this PUCO decision? I mean, this is one of the most important decisions in the history of Ohio, is whether they're going to give a $4 billion bailout to keep this nuke running. I mean, I think it's probably to our benefit that there's a spotlight on him nationally. And,
absolutely. It's the kind of thing he would throw over the side in a minute if he had a chance of winning the presidency. he's been known to move quickly to promote himself.
Right. And I did send a piece to the New York Times. I don't know if they're going to run it. I mean, I hope to God they do. We're talking about, Kevin, I think you saw it, discussing the how this could play out in the presidential campaign. But we really need to focus now, I think, Kevin and Bob, on this question of this PUCO bailout. I mean, here's a guy who's been running against Washington, running against regulation, running against welfare, and this is the ultimate insider corporate welfare deal. So, you know, how do you think we should play this, Kevin and Bob? What are we going to do about this?
Well, I don't know. Obviously, the clean energy movements need to highlight what they want done and follow them on the campaign trail. I mean, it's, you know, I think it should be a bigger issue with this canceling of the alternative energy problems and incentive in the state. I mean, somebody needs to be out there with some signs reminding him, because he might reverse himself by the end of the week on something like that.
Right. Kevin?
Yeah, one of the things that came to mind was a company like Dynegy, which gets no subsidies from the PUCO. It's expected to compete in a supposedly free market against First Energy, getting billions of dollars of ratepayer subsidies, compliments of this state agency. They've pretty much made it clear that they intend to sue, you know, take this thing to court, because it just so happens to be against federal law. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission laws and regulations, and it's also against state law, you know, so there's still a lot of rounds of this boxing match ahead.
Well, I got to say, this is a new experience for us to be on the same side of an issue with Exelon and Dynegy, you know, and plus there's a lot of big industrial users in Ohio who are very much against this. I think Walmart came out against this.
The whole Ohio Manufacturers Association is still adamantly opposed to the bailout.
Yeah, including Bob, Honda, one of the great job providers.
Well, Bob, this would be a great cover for the free press.
Bob Patrakis, my guest,
is the publisher of the film Street Press. And,
Earth Day is coming up, so we expect you to write it. we're working on one as well as, you may not have heard about this, it's a lesser, but interesting, Ohio State is having meetings about privatizing their energy on campus, and no one can figure out exactly. They're talking about privatizing, they buy energy in the market, and it's relatively cheap, but we're trying to figure out, it's just like their parking garage, they're going to privatize the energy, but there appears to be no requirements that it be sustainable or green. And that's, either the first or second largest university in America.
Well, I think what they're probably planning on doing is having these giant, like, squirrel cages and have the football team run in them and generate electricity that way. What do you think? But, important. You raised the issue of the Kasich killing the green energy plan. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? I don't know how much... And Richard Charman, you're on the line with us too, yes?
Right.
Okay, so we'll get to you in a minute, Richard, but we want to, this is a big deal here. I see it as a big windfall for us in Ohio that Kasich is actually, now in the three remaining, candidates for president here. And, we really need to figure out how to leverage this, with the Davis-Bessey issue. So, Bob, can you tell us a bit about what Kasich did to the green energy plan in Ohio?
There were the tax incentives that were attached to alternative energy, and he came in and essentially, as to some extent, he's done with affordable housing as well, and you just cancel the tax incentive, and then billions of dollars of projects, solar and wind already in the works, the funding isn't there. The tax credits aren't there. The subsidies aren't there. But, again, a tremendous reversal for a state that was really primed for alternative energy.
Yeah, one thing people have to understand about Ohio, you don't think much about Ohio solar, although they did have a pretty big solar farm on the books for southern Ohio, and clearly there must have been enough sun down there to make it work, but Northern Ohio is almost ideal for wind power because it's not as strong. The winds aren't as strong as they are in the Dakotas and the Great Plains, but they're steady along the lake and it's flat, so it's easy to build windmills there. And there's a lot of transmission. That's the key. Northern Ohio is just completely networked with transmission lines, which are not available out in the Great Plains. And they also, the wind sites are close to the cities. So it's hard to do better economically for wind power than Northern Ohio. And my understanding is there is $2 billion ready of privately funded projects ready to go in there. And Kasich not only killed the, with the legislature, of course, which he now blames, by the way, he's blaming the Republican legislature for this, but he signed the bill to kill the incentive package that was there beforehand. But also he signed some really weird distance siting regulations on wind power that are completely gratuitous and have no function whatsoever except to kill the wind industry. And, this guy talks about jobs, talks about, building income in Ohio, and no one did more damage than he did by signing that restriction.
Another irony of the whole reversal on renewables is that Toledo area is a real hub for solar PV manufacture. You've got First Solar up there. And, I have to travel back to Michigan a lot for work. And every time I go by on the toll road, I want to take a look at that First Solar plant. And it has grown in the last 15 years by leaps and bounds in size. But now they have to export those solar PV panels out of Ohio because it's not a pro-business environment for the solar PV industry to do installation in Ohio because of Kasich's reversals.
Yeah, it's pathetic. And, of course, you're riding on a toll road that essentially Kasich gave away. I mean, Bob, you want to comment on that? Didn't Kasich privatize the Ohio Turnpike?
And the liquor and a variety of other things. But not only did he privatize it, he made it absolutely, totally non-transparent to match the voting machines in the state and in the nation. Is that? And then he brought a friend he knew from his days at Lehman, a entrepreneur. But really, it seemed to be an effort to, by privatizing them, by making them sort of nonprofit or private entities, it means you can't get any of the public records. And that seemed to be what he was working towards more than anything else. And you really can't verify how many jobs he actually created that way.
Well, my understanding is that didn't he get a whole bunch of money from turning over the Ohio Pike and then use that to build roads?
Yeah, and he turned over the, he did it with the liquor store. They did it with the Turnpike, which, by the way, had a long history of having mob connections up there in the northeast Ohio. The Turnpike. Huge problems during the Voinovich administration back in the 1990s when it turned out an admitted mobster was the guy appointed as the Turnpike Commissioner.
So, Kevin, when you're riding on the Ohio Turnpike, just remember you're feeding the mafia. So you may want to take some back roads and make a political statement.
Well, I'd take more Amtrak trains if they existed, Harvey.
Oh, well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's raise that before we move on to Richard Charnin and discussing the election protection here. The first thing, I don't know if it was the very first thing, Bob, I don't remember, but when Kasich came in, we had won. There was a great bipartisan grassroots movement in Ohio for 10 years to restore passenger rail service to central Ohio. Columbus, Ohio is the biggest capital city in the Western world without passenger rail service. And my niece left on the last train from Columbus in 1979, for God's sakes. Finally, just as Strickland was running for re-election, we won a $400 million grant from the federal government to restore rail service between Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, and Cincinnati. And that both Cleveland and Cincinnati have Amtrak connections. So Columbus would have actually been connected with the outside world. Instead, we're kind of in Siberia here. Kasich came in, and Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, this guy came in, he killed it. He sent a $400 million check back to the federal government. There were no hearings, no public discussion. We never heard an explanation. And the money has gone to Southern California. The $400 million has been used to, and I can testify that it is now possible to take the train from the Burbank Airport to San Luis Obispo, because I've done it, thanks to the $400 million that Ohio didn't get for the train service between Cleveland and Columbus. Did you ever hear, Bob, of any sane explanation for why he sent that money back?
Well, none that made any sense. It was the 3C corridor. I remember it was going to go through Cleveland to Columbus to Cincinnati, hooking up
right.
Ohio's three largest cities. And there it could also hook up with the 4C in Cleveland, Chicago, or go to Detroit or go other places. In Columbus, you'd go directly over to Indianapolis. It would have been a great project. One was that he didn't think it was high-tech enough. Somehow he wanted the other one from inside the State House, people that had been on the staff reported that he actually thought he would get to keep the money, that it was like a block grant as opposed to a specific project grant for a railroad. So he thought that he could keep the money and spend it. He didn't really realize that the money was going back to the feds, that it was a block grant for a railroad. I mean, project grant.
So he gets a $400 million check from the government and can't figure out that if he doesn't put it to railroads, it's going to have to go back to the government.
Well, he thought it was a block grant that he could, a people mover for very rich people around the downtown, a la Detroit.
God. Well, this is the guy who, this, ladies and gentlemen, is John Kasich, the guy who everybody is saying is the sane Republican. I will grant him this. He is the first conservative politician I've ever heard to equate Christianity with charity. You know, all other these guys yell and scream about being Christian. It's about hating women, you know, blocking women's right to choose, getting rid of contraception. We all know, of course, that Jesus never used contraception. So, you know, all these things. But Kasich did at one point say that as a Christian, he believed in helping poor people. I almost fell off my chair. But Bob, you know the details of the policy in Ohio. Well, we're not exactly the friendliest state toward people who are homeless or jobless.
Oh no, the here in the capital, we've got a huge boom, and almost all of it is upper middle class. In fact, just within the last week, a low end senior citizen project was canceled due to lack of tax credits, government support, and working class housing was also canceled. So you had about $20 million in the inner city canceled within the last week while Kasich is, has been out running around the state. On the other hand, tremendous building of high-end housing in the Short North and in downtown Columbus. And a lot of that goes is really based on who gets the tax credits for these projects.
Well, we're talking with Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear about the Davis Bessie nuclear plant and the spotlight now on Governor John Kasich, who's being touted as the moderate Republican for president and about to have a major decision made about whether the state is going to grant $3 to $4 billion of rate hikes to pay for this thing, which is falling apart. Kevin has been on this program before discussing the incredibly terrifying details of how bad Davis Bessie really is. Also, Dr. Trakas, publisher of the Free Press, my co-author of our upcoming book with me. Somebody send me a phone there.
Hello? Somebody's got to look at their phone. Okay, good. Our upcoming book, The Strip and Flip Selection of 2016, Five Jim Crows and Electronic Election Theft. And I'd like to segue now a bit. Kevin and Bobby, please do stay on with Richard Charman. Richard, you with us? Hello? Richard Charman? Bob, you still with us?
I'm still here.
And Kevin?
Yes.
Richard Charman, are you with us? Richard must have sat on his phone. He's probably going to call back. So, Bob, let's talk a bit about the politics of what happened here. You and I both went to see Bernie Sanders last Sunday and at Ohio State, between 5,000 and 7,000 people there, a pretty diverse crowd, actually. Many of them young, but many of them not, and certainly racially diverse. I thought Bernie Sanders' speech was quite astounding, actually. I hadn't heard the whole rap before, and here they're out there yelling about him as a single issue candidate. He covered a tremendous amount of ground, don't you think?
Well, I think that's why they got to label him a single issue candidate. Apparently, Democratic Socialists can only go after the plutocrats at the top, the 1% of the rich, and can't have any other positions. But you were right. He did a lot with in the environment. He did a lot with justice for Native Americans. He talked about criminal justice reform. So he was anything but a single-issue candidate. In fact, as someone who used to be a political operative and politics, usually you tell them to stick to three issues. You know, he was more like a dozen issues. He was very diverse in terms of the issues he was hitting on.
Well, I agree with that entirely. I was actually quite moved. One thing about I have a piece up today at Reader Supported News. Hopefully, Bob, you'll pick it up at freepress.org. Just encouraging people, essentially, to not be discouraged. I mean, we have to keep things in perspective. The mainstream media, the corporate media, is talking, as far as I'm concerned, we're the mainstream media. That's the corporate media, is talking about how he lost his primaries in Ohio, Illinois. I don't know what's going to happen in Missouri. It was pretty close between him and Hillary and two other states. But the fact of the matter is that Bernie Sanders is basically a 60s leftist. And, you know, his politics, like yours and mine, Bob, and Kevin, you're much too young for this, but, you know, since the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement, there's a group of people who, baby boomers, whose politics have not really changed much since the new left of the 60s. And listening to Bernie Sanders, you sound like a professor, basically, giving the standard, you know, time-honored and very beautiful litany of new left issues. I mean, is that too much to say there, Bob?
No, I think this is the apex of the new left movement, which was, you know, in many ways, you know, for justice for all people, you know, all power to the red man, all power, you know, to those in the Brown Buffalo movement. It really was a diverse human right movement, you know, from the Black Panthers to various, you know, prison reform and ethnic movements. It was anti-bureaucratic, right? It was anti-corporate capitalism at its very core. It was about democratizing the means of production and distribution. That's what democratic socialism has long talked about, involving the community, involving workers. It never was overly excited about simple-minded nationalization. It really wanted participatory democracy. And those are the themes that Bernie is hitting. And I think you're right. Having, you know, met Bernie back in 1980 when he was running for mayor of Burlington, his message fundamentally has not changed at all.
And he's extremely articulate. I mean, I just thought, you know, he's not a wild and crazy guy. I mean, he's up there. He's 74 years old, conducts himself beautifully. You know, humor, warm. Starts off the speech by denouncing Donald Trump's fascism, although he did not use the term fascist, which other people have used. You know, one thing Trump has done for the dialogue in this country is allowed the introduction of the term fascist, which was really off limits all these years. You could never call anybody a fascist. And
well, I think
you'd
have to go back to George Wallace in 72.
Yeah, really. But Wallace was not a rich guy. Wallace was not exactly a self-indulgent multi-billionaire. You know, you didn't really want to call Wallace a fascist because he was a working-class guy. Whereas Donald Trump, you know, more power to everybody who recognizes what a fascist he is. My friend Lila Garrett, who's got a show on KPFK, has made the distinction, as have other people. Trump is not a Hitler, at least not yet. I can't imagine really Trump running.
Yeah, but he's starting to get a little close to Mussolini.
And he's
even with Franco.
Yeah, so there should be a bumper sticker, you know, he's not Hitler. And then the subtitle was, well, Mussolini, Franco, well, yeah, maybe. So, you know, so there
yeah,
is
actually,
a big
difference. I swear he has some of the same mannerisms and characteristics when I see him up there nodding as Mussolini.
Yeah, well, I wonder, do you think he speaks Italian? That's the question. Of course, the main comparisons to Trump have been Berlusconi, the billionaire fascist in Italy in recent times. But Bernie refrained from using that talk and that word, and I have to say that, you know, he denounced Trump as a demagogue to begin with, and at the end of the speech, basically, very beautifully, I thought, just said, well, you know, love always triumphs over hate, and that's
where
we're at.
Well, you used the term Trump, he said. love trumps hate. Which...
Yeah, there you go. That's good. That's good. So, you know, I was very, very happy with the speech. I wrote this piece today on Reader Supported News. Hopefully, Jason, you'll post it at PRN. And the basic bottom line is that his candidacy, this campaign has been a tremendous a gift to democratic social democracy and socialism in this country. And it's really taken, first of all, it's moved the term socialist back into the dialogue, which it hasn't been since 1920, really. And it's actually, you know, this is a big movement. It's a big, people are worried now what's going to happen after. You know, it's just another, Occupy. It's another Queen for Gene. It's another anti-war movement. It's just another, step in the evolution of people in this country getting some kind of political consciousness. I'm just thrilled.
Yeah. Hi, Avi.
Yes. Oh, Richard,
this
you're
is
back.
Rich Charnin.
Okay, good. I think you must have sat on your phone. So
No. What happened was I was cut off.
Okay, well, here
off.
You are. You're back.
Call back.
So let's talk about this in a minute. Let's let Bob and I finish.
Go ahead. I just want to let you know.
And then,
I was on.
Then we want to talk about the dynamics, the mechanics of the elections. So people, but the reason I wrote this piece today, which is called Run, Bernie, Please Keep Running, is you know, we want to encourage people not to be discouraged by if he's not winning states. I mean, here's a guy straight out on the left, Bob Fitrakis, who's getting 30, 40, even more percent in the Democratic primaries in this country. It's a big deal.
Very few precedents in U.S. history. And those precedents were not on a national level. Those were at state levels. The nonpartisan league in North Dakota in the 1920s, who decided that the socialists should run as Republicans and call themselves the nonpartisan league. They took over the whole state, created the largest state bank between the Mississippi River and the California coast, the State Development Bank of North Dakota. They set up cooperative grain mills, and then, you know, the other side organized and went in and accused them of corruption and ran them out. And, of course, Upton Sinclair, a well-known socialist, author of The Jungle, who, to the dismay of Norman Thomas, created Epic in Poverty in California and did very, very well, you know, was the candidate of the Democratic Party. Remember, the movie moguls actually had fake newsreel of all the hobos in America getting box cars and coming out to live in California.
You're right. Turning to Santa Monica, the home of the homeless. Well, so now we have a situation where Bernie Sanders is going to go into the Democratic convention somewhere between 30 and 50% of the delegates as a socialist. This is spectacular. I don't think people quite fathom how
unprecedented shift in our political culture.
Absolutely. So, Richard Charnin, you're with us now, and you are our statistician of choice here. Have you seen continued irregularities? We talked before about the Massachusetts primary, where Hillary somehow managed to win all the precincts with voting machines, and Bernie won all the ones with hand counted paper ballots. What are you seeing now? Did you see anything on this last Tuesday or other elections that are statistically we need to worry about?
Absolutely. We've got a situation where I believe the numbers are showing that Sanders may very well have won three of those five elections on Tuesday. And they're looking into that right now. I've written a blog post on it. I've calculated some probabilities. He actually led the unadjusted exit polls in Illinois, and it was 10% discrepancy between the exit poll and the recorded vote in Ohio, which, of course, you guys should know about. There's a lot of questions coming on whether that, in fact, was stolen. 10% discrepancy
is very big. Now, it might have even been bigger than that, because the exit polls that did come in had already, we have to assume, were already being adjusted. And yet, Sanders was leading in the three exit polls that we're, you know, in Illinois and the other, well, let's see.
Missouri.
Missouri. Yeah, hold on.
What finally happened in Missouri, by the way? Is did Missouri go?
Missouri, yeah, that's it.
What finally happened?
I don't know. I think there may be a recount, possibly. I'm hearing that might be going on. But the point is that this election is still very much open. There was a lot of depression among Sanders supporters that he has no way back. My gut feeling is, with a lot of blue states coming up and western and northern states, that he might do very well. So I don't think that Sanders supporters should be too disappointed. He's won, and here's what we've got. 26 states have had primaries. Sanders has won 9 officially. But yet the evidence is very solid. He may have won as many as 15. That six of the elections were very likely stolen. We know about the caucuses in Iowa, Nevada. We also have 4 other elections, namely, of course, Massachusetts. He did squeak through in Michigan, but he probably did better than, again, in every election. I believe he did better than the recorded vote. So he's actually, you know, Hillary padded her votes in the red states. So it looks a lot worse than it is. I don't believe
she did that, Richard. How is Hillary padding her
well,
her vote
again,
count?
It comes down to the same thing, rigged election polls, rigged elections. How she's doing it, it could be absentee ballots, it could be vote flipping, any number. It just does not make sense that she got the percentages she did. I'm not saying she didn't win. I'm saying rather than getting 85%, maybe she only had 65. That makes a big difference. So it's the old story. It's what Bush did in 2004. He knew he wouldn't win New York and California, but he stole a lot of votes there to pad his popular vote. So even though Sanders lost, it makes it appear that he lost by a lot more. And my latest blog post, by the way, just wrote the other day, is once again going viral. I looked at the five primaries and a full probability analysis based on, again, the exit polls. But I'm going to emphasize, absentees. We determined, John Brakey, 75% of absentee votes went for Hillary when she only had like 49 or 50%. Now we're finding out in Ohio, I just found out in email, that she's also getting ridiculous high absentee voting compared to her precinct voting. So
well,
that'll become
really interesting things, Richard, that happened there. The Franklin County Board of Election reported it sent back absentees to certain voters. And I can bet they're probably new voters that were young. They actually admitted they made a mistake and sent the absentee ballots back to voters in Franklin County, where Ohio State is, and which was on break.
That's one of them, Franklin, yeah. And
we're talking
about, I just found out in the email, John Brakey from Arizona has been doing this stuff for years. I mean, he really goes into it, and he's getting more and more information on other states, Illinois as well. So I think this is turning out to be very interesting. There might be some real surprises.
Well, Richard, here's
one
thing.
Here real quick.
When they called the election before Clinton, not a single precinct had reported in Cuyahoga County. I was on the phone with them wondering why there were no results from the Cleveland area, and they said there won't be for 45 minutes. At that point, based on the exit polls and absentees, they had already called the election for Hillary.
Really quickly, the music's about to start up. Kevin Camps, thank you for joining us here from Beyond Nuclear. People should look at your site about the article on Takahama. And you're going to stick with us, hopefully, and we'll further discussion in future shows on Davis Bessie. Right, Kevin?
Very good. Love to.
Okay, Kevin, how do people reach you?
Our website is beyondnuclear.org.
Okay, and Bob, thank you, Kevin. Bob Strick is my co-conspirator, publisher of freepress.org and the Columbus Free Press. We should be posting Richard's stuff there, hopefully. Richard Charnin, what are you telling us? First of all, where do people find your stuff?
RichardCharnin.wordpress.com.
Okay, RichardCharnin.wordpress.com. And you are continuing to analyze. Let me ask you very quickly, overall, do you think that Bernie has actually been getting more legitimate votes than Hillary? Do you believe if you took a composite of the primaries to date that Hillary would actually be losing to Bernie in the popular vote?
No, I won't go that far because she piled up such tremendous margins in the red states. However, the states coming up, California, New York, I believe he's ahead in the polls in both. So,
all right,
going to change.
Richard, we'll pick this up next week. Thanks to the crew in New York. Richard, thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk more at a future show.
Great.
Take care.
Okay, thanks.
See you next week. Bye.